We're joined this morning by New York Times best-selling author, and now, as I have written here, as I was updated, three-time Sports Writer of the Year, Tom Verducci, joining us. And he has the book called The Cubs Way, The Zen of Building the Best Team in Baseball and Breaking the Curse. I'm not, being here in Cleveland, I'm doing the interview, but I'm looking at the lineup card in the beginning of this book. I'm feeling a little, a little emotional right now, Tom. But I'm sort of about happy for the Cubs. I mean, if a team had to beat our tribe, the way the Cubs did it and the way things worked out, I guess I can live with it. But you after this Game 7 ended, you decided there was a story to be told, I suppose.
Well, absolutely. I think it's the greatest baseball story of our lifetimes. You know, when you wait 108 years to win a World Series and then play what might have been the most dramatic Game 7 in baseball history. I mean, you think about how close the Indians came to winning. I still think the untold story of that game was the bottom of the ninth inning when Aroldis Chapman was on fumes on the mound and the Indians had the top of their lineup coming up. I felt like they were one base runner away from winning the World Series. And then, of course, the most famous rain delay in World Series history allows the Cubs to recalibrate and win the game in the 10th inning. So, yeah, this was, I know it didn't turn out the way Indians fans dreamed it would, but they gave us, the Indians were certainly part of one of the best World Series I've ever seen.
What happened in that rain delay? Did you get any insight into that? What was going on in the Cubs' locker room?
Well, it's interesting. I was covering the game for Fox, and I was assigned to the Cubs' side of the field, so I'm right next to the Cubs' dugout. And after the Rajai Davis home run tied the game, it was extremely quiet and, I would say, anxious in the Cubs' side. And then after that rain delay, during the rain delay, Jason Hayward called the team meeting and sort of reminded everybody how good the Cubs were. And I believe that that break in the game allowed the Cubs to reset everything. And I can tell you that being down there, when they came back in the dugout for the 10th inning, that was a completely different team. It sounded like a high school football team coming out for its homecoming game. They were all charged up and loud. And of course, the first hitter, Kyle Schwarber, got a base hit. And that really got the ball rolling.
The line, subline of your book, The Zen of Building the Best Team in Baseball. Why did you choose Zen as a word for a title, part of the title?
Well, because I think there's something in play here that is difficult to measure and define. And, of course, we live in an age now with baseball where we like to measure everything, right? A game is played, and it's been changed by analytics. And certainly Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer, the front office men of the Cubs, have been big believers of that ever since their days in Boston. But they found that extra element, which is the human element, and they found a manager in Joe Maddon was the last piece of the puzzle, who is just terrific at finding the right culture, the right atmosphere, allowing players, especially young players, to just be themselves and to prosper. It's difficult to define, but that was one of the parts, the major parts of Theo's blueprint, was the culture of a team. And it took 5 years for it to actually coalesce, but that was very important to him. Again, tough to measure. Tough to duplicate, but they found a great mix in terms of the group of players and the manager. And, of course, they're all still pretty young, so this group is going to be together for a while.
Did Theo Epstein kind of learn that in Boston, understanding the chemistry and how if it's not really working well, other things, no matter how talented you are, won't come together?
Absolutely. In fact, he told me that's something that, you know, he did learn. You know, in his early days in Boston, he felt like, well, just give me the best players. Give me players who grind out at bats. Give me pitchers who can miss bats with their pitches. And I don't care about character or chemistry. We're going to beat your team. But, you know, he learned some things in Boston. He learned some things, especially in 2011, his last year there, when the team went 7-20 in September and basically coughed up a playoff spot. And while that team was spiraling, they did have issues in their clubhouse. And I think that was a lesson he learned. And when he got to Chicago with the Cubs, that was something he emphasized from day one. You know, we want to build a sustainable team and a winning competitive team. And the only way to do that is to have the right culture. And the only way to have that is with the right players. So he told the scouts, make sure you go out there and you get players who not only can play baseball, but are high character players. And you look around the team and the roster and you realize they were pretty successful at finding those high character players.
Now, our current manager, Terry Francona, was there in Boston at the time that they, you know, turned things around. Joe Maddon's now there at Chicago. Watching the World Series, seeing the two men on their different dugouts, totally different personalities. Things are going on. Terry Francona's nervously chewing and moving and spitting. And you see Joe Maddon sort of just sitting there you know, still, what's going on behind those shades sometimes? What did you learn about that man?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that back after the 2003 season, when the Red Sox were looking for a manager, they interviewed both Francona and Joe Maddon. You know, they chose Terry Francona in part because they wanted somebody with experience, especially in a big market like Boston. It wasn't that they didn't like Joe Maddon. He just didn't have a major league job on his resume at the time. So obviously, Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer liked Joe Maddon even back then. But I think there's a lot of similarities. I think both Joe Maddon and Terry Francona have an incredible sense of humor. And I think both of them have something that every manager has to have, and that's the trust of their players. And I think they do that by really understanding players on a personal level. You know, Terry, of course, is famous for playing cribbage with his players, mixes it up with the guys in the clubhouse. Joe Maddon's the same way. He wants to make sure he connects with the players on a personal level first, and then gets their trust as a player second. And I think they both are excellent in that regard. You know, every player wants a manager who they can trust in. And I think the minute a manager lies or disassembles to a player, he's going to lose the trust of that player. And I think Joe Maddon and Terry Francona are two of the best at getting and maintaining the trust of the player.
Where did the idea for these suits that I can't buy off the rack, where'd this all come from?
Yeah, these themed road trips that Joe Maddon has. First of all, you have to go back to the dress code that he has, which there's only one rule to it. He tells his players, wear whatever you think makes you look hot. So there really is no dress code in Chicago. Every once in a while, I want to say about once a month, maybe twice a month, they have a themed road trip. And he started this in Tampa Bay, and it could be anything from varsity letter sweaters to Miami Vice look where everybody wears white. To last year, I know he had an NBA warm-up theme trip. The players really dig it. They just like it because it's fun. Joe sees it as a team bonding experience. Everybody buys into it. They try to come up with the next creative idea. I don't know how they keep coming up with more, but they do. And it's something that they look forward to. And it's something that Joe has done for a long time, starting in Tampa Bay. And it's a tradition he brought to Chicago because he thinks it works in terms of just keeping the guys loose, and more importantly, use it as a bonding experience.
We're talking today with Tom Verducci, who's written the book The Cubs Way, The Zen of Building the Best Team in Baseball and Breaking the Curse. When I open up this book, the first thing I see is this multicolored lineup card from Game 7. I see our Indians lineup there, the Cubs as well. There's the typical players scratched out, moved around, arrows pointing here. But there's a whole lot of things stuck in the margins and different letters. Is this unique? I mean, is this Joe Maddon? Is that who he is?
Yeah, it is. I haven't seen anything like it. It's extremely unique. It's a fascinating blend of art and science, if you will. And a lot of the art is in the marginalia that is around the card, basically every open space, whether it's top, bottom, sides, or even down the spine of his lineup card. A lot of personal notations. He has initials of some of his deceased family and friends. He has reminders to himself. Last year, he added the words positive, optimistic, just to remind himself in the course of the game when he looks down at his card, just to stay that way. I saw him the other day in St. Louis. The Cubs are playing the Cardinals. I asked him if he had any new additions. He's running out of room, but he does have something on his card. He does have DFH, don't forget the heartbeat. That was one of his themes this year when the team gathered for spring training. Again, Cubs stressing the human element. Both Theo Epstein and Joe Maddon are very big on that. And I've never seen a lineup card like it in terms of all the personal information and as well as the analytical information.
Talk a little bit about how they kind of sort of built this team. You mentioned about the chemistry, but it's one thing for chemistry. You got to get talent and you got to get people to believe. How did that all come together?
Yeah, you're right. I think it came together because I mentioned the stressing of the character, but also Theo Epstein stressed having position players be the core of the team. Basically, starting from scratch back in 2012, a lot of teams were emphasizing, and still do, pitching, right? We always hear that you can never have enough pitching. Pitching beats good hitting. We know how the relief pitching, especially in recent years, has become so important. But Theo had a different idea. He was zigging when everybody else was zagging, and he loaded up on position players. Now, why did he do that? A couple of reasons. Number one, he felt like pitchers were more risky because of the threat of Tommy John surgery and other injuries that are so prevalent. But also he knew part of putting together this team was not just trying to get good players, but changing the culture, that lovable losers image that the Cubs had. And he really believed that everyday players are the ones who change the culture, not pitchers. Pitchers can lead a pitching staff, but they're not really team leaders. So one of his first moves was to go get Anthony Rizzo, and that was quickly followed by drafting Chris Bryant. He drafted Kyle Schwarber, and he traded for Addison Russell. And those four players, which he got within, what, two and a half years of getting to Chicago, are the four pillars of this team. And it was not by accident. It was because he wanted to emphasize position players with high character, and he was very successful getting those four guys and some others.
Have you been watching David Ross perform on Dancing with the Stars? After, I mean, it almost shows, and it's an extension of maybe how he was in the clubhouse or how he was with his team, or even now how his teammates, his former teammates, kind of still root for him. And there's a bond there that you can see that's unbreakable.
Absolutely. I mean, David Ross is one of the most popular teammates, no matter what team he was on, and quickly so. First of all, he's a very smart baseball player, and I know that guys like Anthony Rizzo and Chris Bryant leaned on him a lot to learn things, especially about other pitchers and the way they were attacking them. But more than that, I think it's his personality. He's got a great sense of humor. He's very outgoing, a self-deprecating sense of humor. But it's all bundled in a package that is very baseball smart. So people just like being around David Ross. You learn something and you laugh. That's a pretty good combination to have, and it looks like he's still having fun now that he's retired.
Now, can the Cubs do it again? I guess is another question. How does what you do come together, and then how do you build on that now that you are the world champions?
Well, now that they won, I think their biggest issue is fighting complacency. But I can tell you, being around this team, I don't think that's an issue for this particular team. It may have been so with other teams in the past, but I think especially because this team is so young. They're just getting started. I think they'll be a better offensive team because a lot of these guys have only had 1 or 2 years in the big league, so they haven't really scratched the surface of what their potential is. And I just think that this team was the best team in baseball last year over 162, and they won the World Series. That doesn't always happen for the best team over the course of the season also wins the playoffs, but it did last year, and they're the best team on paper going into this season, so they have a really, really good chance of repeating. That being said, I mean, you saw last year, I think, in Game 7, how thin the line is between winning a World Series and not winning a World Series. So you do have to have luck on your side as well.
How are the Cubs fans celebrating or holding out, or are they able to, you know, embrace the champion and not worry about being the GOAT?
Yeah, I think Cubs fans are going to be on a honeymoon period for the entire season. Now, let's see when the Cubs get in the postseason. It's hard to imagine that they're not in the postseason, but they're enjoying this as well. They should. I mean, it's a great time. You saw how many people turned out for their parade when they won the World Series. I mean, my goodness, that was the largest gathering of humanity in the history of the Western Hemisphere, and it was for a baseball team in Chicago. It was crazy. So they're on cloud nine. There's no question about it. They deserve to be. I'm curious to see if expectations change now, where, you know, anything short of a world championship now may be disappointing in Chicago. But for now, as the season is just getting started, there's still the joy of last season, I think, is still carrying over.
You think we're going to find your book on the shelves of most GMs around Major League Baseball in the future? Does that get a quick read on it, or maybe they'll just read it in the bookstore so they won't be seen with it? But obviously, any blueprint to get an idea of how to make things work. Again, the Cubs way, the zen of building the best team in baseball and breaking the curse. Our guest today, Tom Verducci. Tom, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks.